Next presentation we have is by Lena Dawkins-Moulton. Lena is a second year health education doctoral student in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. She received her master's degree from Prairie View A&M University in Texas and her undergraduate degree from the University of the West Indies in Jamaica. Her research interests include school health, and more specifically, her work examines the intersection of home and school and its impact on children's health outcomes. Please welcome Lena.
Thank you very much. Okay, today the presentation I'll be doing looks at the relationship between school take-home assignments and parent screen time rules for children, and I have no conflict of interest to disclose. What I will be doing, I'll be doing a quick overview of the school wellness and advocacy project, and after I've done that, then I'm going to look at the result of our analysis of some of our baseline data. I start with a quote here from McClure and others, which says, mediating structures represent strong ties. Changes in individuals without the support of these mediating structures is difficult to achieve. And two of the mediating structures we are looking at when we think about children's behavior are the home and the school. And we know that the home influences behavior in many ways. We have academic performance, physical activity, food and vegetable consumption, smoking intention. We also know that a school is a powerful influence on children's behavior. What maybe we're not very clear about is how the home and the school interrelate. So yes, we know that interventions that include a family or home component tend to be more successful. But what about specific activities in the home and specific activities in the schools? How do these interrelate? And that is what leads us to our research question, which is there a relationship between school take-home assignments related to physical activity and parental rules for screen time? The data for this research comes from the School Wellness and Advocacy Project. This was a NIH-funded project that was done in partnership between Prairie View A&M University and Texas A&M University. It focused on children in the elementary school, specifically at the fourth grade, and their parents. The objectives of SWAP were, well, it included, among others, to assess the various determinants of child obesity from multiple levels, assess the influence of the school and community policy and environments on dietary and physical activity behaviors among study participants. The long-term goal was to prevent and reduce the incidence of childhood obesity and overweight in order to improve the overall health and wellness of individuals and the community. Now, this project, it developed a number of lessons, physical activity and nutrition lessons, which were implemented in the schools by the research staff. There were 12 lessons in the curriculum. And the data I have comes from the cross-sectional data in 2010. And let us talk a little bit about the study setting. The study was conducted in Waller County. This is a rural community in Texas, southwest Texas, 519 square miles. At the time of data collection, the population was about 35,000. That has swelled since to by about 10,000 residents. The major communities in the community are in the county are Hempstead, Brookshire, Prairie View, Cady, Waller, Pine Island, and Patterson. And the poverty in that community, most residents are 18% of the residents live below the poverty level. For this aspect, the data was collected. We collected both qualitative and quantitative data. For the quantitative aspect, we used a 157-item questionnaire. I know it's a bit lengthy. We distributed about 700 or over 700 questionnaires. 298 were returned, and we're looking at about a 40% response rate. We did descriptive analyses and multinomial logistic regression models were performed on screen time rules, with the predictor being school assignments. And we pulled out from the questionnaire questions that related specifically to assignments or activities that were trying to increase children's physical activity, assignments or activities that were trying to decrease children's screen time and rules that parents constructed for their children. Here we're looking at the responses, a report from the parents. And in terms of parents reporting on the assignments their children take home, 35% of the parents reported that their children took home assignments related to increase in physical activity. Roughly about the same number, 37.7%, reported that the children took home assignments related to reducing screen time. It's possible that it's the same parents where the children took home assignments for physical activity. They're the same ones who reported their children taking home assignments for, that intended to reduce screen time. Then when we look at the parents' report of their screen time rules, 49.3% had rules that required their children watch less than 2 hours of TV DVD per day. 68% had rules related to gaining permission before internet use. The numbers dropped significantly when it comes to having to exercise first before using TV or computer. There we have 18.6% saying, yeah, they have that kind of rule in place. When we we have here the model, when we look at the regression model, we realize that we have significance here, statistical significance here, here, and down here. So in terms of physical activity, when the students bring home physical activity, whether it's less than 2 hours of TV or DVD per day, screen time, if they brought home assignments related to screen time, in terms of appearance, rules about the amount of television they can, or whether or not they can watch television before they exercise, and rules related to internet use. What does that say? Parents were 3 times more likely to ask children to watch TV or DVD less than 2 hours every day when the children took home assignments to increase physical activity. We also find that they were 3.5 times more likely to ask them to exercise first before using the TV or computer, again, when those assignments went home. When there were assignments related to decreasing screen time, the parents were 2 times more likely to ask children to get permission before using the internet. So we realize that there is something happening between the home and the school. There's some relationship between the home and the school. What we're not clear about is the nature of that relationship. Is it that what the school does when they send home assignment is influencing the way parents construct rules for their children? Or is it that the standards of home are filtering down to the schools and influencing the way schools behave? We are not sure. And so it would be useful for future research to look at directionality, to say, what is the direction of the influence that we notice here from our analysis? It would also be useful to clarify the relationship between the home and the school, and to see how those activities interrelate, and we could use that to inform our interventions. The results here must be looked at in the context of the limitations of the study. One, it was self-report, and we know there that if we collected objective data, it could have been a little different. Also, it was cross-sectional, so it was 1 point in time. What happens at other points in time? The sample was also not representative because it was from one rural community in Texas. At this point, I wish to acknowledge the contribution of the PI for the project, Dr. Sharon McQuinney, and all the contributors. And as I said before, this was an NIH-funded research project. Thank you.
Questions for any of the panel presenters. I have a question for Lena. I was wondering, and I might have missed this, how, so the questions about the rules, Were they, so this wasn't open-ended questions, this was a survey, so?
Yes, it was. So the options were yes, no, sometimes.
Okay, so where did the rules come from? Was that a standardized list of rules that parents have? I never heard of somebody saying that you have to exercise before you can get on the internet. I was just wondering where that came from.
The questionnaires were developed from research that looks at different rules for children. And so what they did when they developed the questionnaire, they looked at some of the rules that parents may have for their children, and they incorporated those into the survey.
Okay.
As you're doing this work, particularly with prostate cancer, have you considered or looking at focusing with, say, men's groups or men's ministries in the churches? Because I know you've had the ladies to be a part of it, and they are the main gatekeepers for health. But I'm just wondering if what the research would yield if it was just men influencing other men that have had prostate checks and so forth to encourage other men to do the same and use the venue of a men's ministry.
Remember that one slide where we indicated how in a men's only condition we actually had more men come out, right?
Correct.
And what I noticed, because I've been to all those workshops, at least 80 of them now by now, the ones where we had the CHAs that took roles in their men ministry, they were the ones that actually had a larger turnout. So we did notice that, and when we are training a CHAs, we do encourage them to reach out to men's ministry. If they have a health ministry, to tap into that. The choir group, we did specifically give those recruitment strategies to our CHAs, and it was on them to, carry it out, even though we were there to support them through that process. But we did notice that those that had a specific role in a men's ministry were able to pull out more men to these workshops, which was really nice. And I think, moving forward into other community-based projects in the men's health department, we would definitely target those groups. The problem with some of our smaller churches is they didn't have a large men's ministry. So we had a huge range of, a men's ministry of 10 regular older men that were constantly going every week versus another one where they had 30 to 40 that came out every 2 weeks. So it really depended on the churches, but they did come out more regularly.
Quick follow-up.
Yes.
What has been the participation level of the pastors? Because that is
huge.
The single most significant impact
huge.
For the men to participate.
Yes. So those, before we even rolled out the intervention, we of course had to get the pastor's consent and buy-in. So every church did provide that, even though some of them had a designated person sign the form. The pastors that actually came out or made time to go to the first session, those were the churches we found had more men come out, of course. And so we do also have we're currently collecting church survey data as well. That's separate from the project, but we are measuring the sustainability and the pastor's involvement in different church activities. We are also piloting, so if people are familiar with mega churches, so large congregations, as we are piloting this study in a mega church, and we notice that the pastor there is very, very busy. It's very hard to get him out, but he did plug it at some of his session on Sunday service, and so that got some of the men to come out. But surprisingly, at a mega church, we had less of a turnout than we did at a smaller church where the pastor came out. So we've noticed that as much as it would be nice to get the high participation at a mega church, it's definitely a lot harder to schedule our program amongst all the others that are already happening there.
What I didn't mention is the overall Adelante program and the research that's going on, evaluating the program. I think there was a poster that happened right during our session that talked about that, and But yes, there is a large quasi-experimental study where we are doing both community surveys and high-risk cohort of a group. We have surveys and it's repeated measures, so we have baseline and two follow-up, and it measures not only the PYD constructs and how we're measuring those, but also the outcomes that we're looking at to make change in. So definitely there's an overall Adelante program evaluation. Too early to tell. Right now we're working on the first follow-up, and so we're still analyzing the data.
I actually had a question for you. I know it was a pilot, right?
Yep.
So you were able to give all the students or the kids a good digital camera. So mm-hmm. how was that funded, and mm-hmm. how will that affect, you know, sustainable? If you were to expand the program, how? Because mm-hmm. it seems like a great program. We would love to have it out in the community, but mm-hmm. how would you expand that?
Yeah. So we used part of our P20 funding. We found cameras. Some were donated, and some were relatively low cost, actually. Not too crazy. Okay. Yeah, and so we did it in cohorts of six at a time, so we only had to purchase six at a time. But in the future, I had a similar question when I sent that in my coffee fit. But what we're planning on doing is now that the Adelante website's going to be launched December 1st, using cell phones so anyone can participate, snap shots of whatever they want, and have a constant feed in the website to stimulate discussion about the issues. So using phones as well as cameras. That's kind of how we thought of making it a little more sustainable.
Okay.
A little more digital.
Other questions?
Other question for Elena. The teachers in our neck of the woods in Northern Ohio are offering their homework assignments to computer-based assignments. Mm. Some classes don't even have textbooks. Everything is electronic. And just kind of an implication question for your line of research. Do you see any way that we as health educators, public health educators, can influence the amount of screen time children and families are participating in? And from a more of a macro level, we have schools almost forcing it on the child. How do you see that interface, and what can we do to try and limit that negative health effect of increased screen time due to the homework assignments and even the textbooks being on electronic devices?
That's a good question. And maybe our focus should not be so much on the internet. When we look at the trend in terms of technology, maybe part of our focus should be on what it is that we're spending the time doing. So when we do screen time, instead of saying do not spend time before the internet, do not spend time with the DVD, do not spend time with the television, it's instead what do you spend time with DVD, with television doing. And so maybe part of our work with the community, with the children, with their parents, it's about regulating what children do with that screen time.
I'm thinking even maybe a possibility for health technology to insert itself into
exactly.
this world where there can be some prompts and planned activities where children are kind of prompted to get up and move with their parents or
exactly.
the teachers
exactly.
or the entire class.
We can start the change. So it's a matter of being creative and how do we work to change at those confronts of our community.
Just a little follow-up that it's actually, I don't know the reason why you chose the 2 hour cutoff, but the American Academy of Pediatrics actual policy is the 3 hour screen time for children, and those screen time activities involving physical activity, like they actually endorse Nintendo Wii, and they endorse, I think Xbox. They do endorse those too, and as long as the screen time involves physical activity, it's not counted towards those 3 hours. So, but with this weather, it would do the exercise.
I thought something else was very interesting, the findings that, to correct me if I'm wrong, but when teachers did assignments to increase activity, screen time decreased. Mm-hmm. So that interaction, I think, is really interesting.
Yes.
Because what we see is when teachers then assign students to increase screen time, like
one of the ways in which we can take on future research when we can look at.
Other questions? Comments?
Larger Adelante study, controlling contamination. I wish the PI was here to answer that. But what we do is we have a comparison community as well that is not receiving the intervention. So we are comparing against another community with large scale survey data collection. I don't know if that kind of gets at your question about controlling for contamination. Based on kids who were interested, and we actually didn't have, we stopped once we met our number of cameras that we had. We had recruited six, and that was it. And youth who were who did not get a chance to participate were promised they could later. So it wasn't that you can't participate; it's just we can only have six at a time. I don't know if that answers your question. And we mostly just recruited through people who were already participating in the program and hadn't done that activity yet. Or people who were completely new, who had not yet been engaged in a lot of activity yet. We didn't have any jealousy or any problems. We just said, well, you can participate next time, and they were okay.
All right. It looks like we're almost out of time. We have time for one more question. This has been a really great discussion, and you are all wonderful. Really diverse presentations as well. It went really well. So thank you, and thank you all for coming and being so engaged and involved. It was a really, really interesting conversation. And, so you have contact information. And any last comments or thoughts?
Thank you. All right.